Welcome. Hello, hello, everyone. What's going on, y'all? Welcome to the Jordan Phoenix Show. I'm here with a special guest, episode two, with a very special guest, probably better than we should have gotten for the first episode, Mr. Moon Vagiline.
Vagina.
Vagiline. Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome, Moon. Day.
We're broadcasting live from the basement, and here we are. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me, buddy. How you been, man?
I've been busy. And tired.
Busy is good. Busy and tired is good for our age group.
Yeah, I'm sure that you feel the same way, but whenever you're busy, you wish that you weren't busy, and then whenever you finally have a moment of rest, you feel like you should be busy.
Yeah, you start panicking, like, oh my gosh, I'm not providing for my family at the
level. Nobody will ever hire me again. Every single thing that I have ever done won't mean anything, and then you get back to having too many things, and then it's just a vicious cycle.
Like you said, when you're so busy, you're like, man, I just need a rest, and then as soon as you get a rest, you panic, because you remember the last time you had a rest, you were fucking broke.
Right, but you, and at some point, maybe when you turn 50 or however old you are, you realize that it's just ebbs and flows, and, you know, and there will be a tomorrow, and the sun will rise, and,
yeah. I'm not even 40. But
sure,
I've lived being such a young father and doing the career stuff. I feel like I've lived close to about 50 or 60
Much
years.
Older
so
than 50.
I see exactly what you're saying. I think most of our age group or most of our style person will hit that around 45. I think I'm hitting that right around now where I'm realizing, like, not to quote like the wedding singer, but everything is going to be okay.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I'm getting there, and I'm getting much more just at peace being either in full motion or at rest and realizing that there's some things I need to say no to.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's growth right there.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's so cliche to say because everybody clicks into that at some point, but legitimately saying no and being okay with it is something I'm now getting in the rhythm of.
Yes. Speaking of being 50, tell me about that family of birds living in what used to be a beard on your face.
Oh, dude.
What are their names?
I lost. I lost a competition on the Riz Show, and I have to not. Or I'm not allowed to trim anything above my shoulders until 2020. Currently, I'm not trying to date your episode here, but currently I have 92 days to go.
No.
So 92 days.
I think it looks good considering the birds, you know?
Yeah, there's animals in here. Lice can't live in beards, otherwise I'd be worried about that.
We
looked that up.
Wow.
Yeah,
they don't like
the temperature. Your face is a different temperature than your scalp.
Okay, now you can't shave your head either?
I'm not allowed to trim anything. Now,
what
shaving,
about
cutting, trimming, no, ears, nose, eyebrows, it's all growing fully. My gums are growing hair at this point.
You're wearing a hat right now. We're not doing video yet,
so
nobody
gross.
Sees. But
it's like full curl.
I think it's beautiful.
Dirt mop, man. No, it's awful.
It reminds me of Maybe Today.
It is maybe. It's getting. It's Junior Maybe Today. The problem is, I just got back from London 2 days ago. From an entire UK Goldfinger run.
And yeah, let's talk about that golf. So I was impressed by the cities that you went to. Looks like you guys went to Athens, Georgia, Dublin, California, Naples, Florida, Glasgow, Kentucky, Paris, Texas, Vienna, Virginia. An impressive list of European-sounding names. Did I get those right?
People are going to be so confused. They're going to go, "Wow, that was weird. I thought he was in the UK."
But yeah, it was like it was clever because it was a UK tour, but you guys just did cities that had UK
no,
tour
Jordan,
names.
No, Jordan,
is that
real?
Wrong?
It was real United Kingdom.
Oh.
I used foreign currency for 10 days or
okay.
12 days.
That's clever. That's good.
It was spectacular.
I followed on the gram, and it looked like you guys were being silly and having fun and doing what it's all about.
It was one of the better tours of my life, and I think it's because I've done a lot. Yeah, and every band that was on the tour, including the young band, there was an opening band that the singer was a 20-year-old gal, and she was a shredder. They were all shredders, but including
that
them
makes me feel uncomfortable when people play guitar well.
She was amazing. The guitar player, the other guitar player was amazing as well. Thieves of Liberty is their band name. So
Shout out to Thieves of Liberty.
Yeah, so they opened the tour, young band, but the rest of the tour was old. I would say old guys. It was Save Ferris and Goldfinger and Less Than Jake. And
she's a babe, by the way, Sae Ferris. I forgot about them, and then I saw that Feldman and her did like some kind of duet kind of thing or something, right?
Oh, right.
And
right.
I was like, who? I remember that. And then I was like, she held up well.
Dude, she's so dope, and she's the coolest gal, and she's so nice to hang with, and she's just on fire.
Yeah.
On stage and off stage. So Sae Ferris was flawless. She's been doing this for decades,
sure.
And this is one of the better sounding Goldfinger tours of all time,
okay.
For sure. And I'm not just saying that as a band member. I'm saying that is like people that have seen us a thousand times, yeah. Like Less Than Jake.
Sure.
Even said this is the best iteration of Goldfinger in history.
I overheard you saying that Less Than Jake, this is one of the best times. They sound incredible right now.
They have always sounded better than 98% of all bands in that genre.
Sure.
But they are just so good and so practiced. Those guys tour continually.
Right.
So from JR to Matt, who's doing drums now, like they are just amazing. And Chris, it doesn't matter what you feed him or what he's drinking or any of that or how much he slept, that guy is such a great singer. He's such an underrated singer. People don't give Less Than Jake the credit from Roger to him to Matt on drums now. Like, that is one of the best put together and sounding bands in rock history. And I don't mean to make that sound dramatic or anything. Like, yeah. I've seen so many bands so many times. And my favorite bands usually are pretty inconsistent.
Sure.
Which is fine. Averagely inconsistent.
It happens, right.
Some of the most great sounding shows you've ever seen. And then you see them 3 days later and you're like, whoa, holy shit, Birmingham, Alabama got a real bad show. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because it's hard to crush it every single day with your voice and so many things.
But I will compliment Less Than Jake. That band is an incredible party and an example to musicians on the side of the stage every single show. And this tour was incredible. Incredible, dude. We played for 42 or something hundred on the floor in London at the
Brixton Academy. Those venues look so cool,
dude. Like awesome.
The quintessential, like, behind the drummer, like, see the whole venue. I was like, shit, that doesn't look like Athens, Georgia. You know,
no shit, that was not Athens.
I was so confused.
And we even played some smaller markets in the UK. Like, not a lot of tours go to Sheffield, for instance.
Which is fun because then people are like. Like, when you're in a major market, you're like, yeah, I mean, Goldfinger's going to be here, but then
London.
I'm going to go see, you know, the Killers tomorrow. And, like, then you get, like, a smaller venue who's like, you guys took the time to come out and see us?
It was super cool, dude. We even played, a coastal town down south, and it's not Bristol, Brighton, which is, like, a bigger inn.
Yeah, with, right, right.
It was Bournemouth and Boscombe, and it was, like, I'm not going to say this to upset anybody or to be another person that says this kind of stuff, but we get so used to American crowds and especially American major markets, and you just have to do so much to be impressive, it seems.
Yeah. We lead the world, so that's the bar is set so high that you're a piece of shit if you're not.
Yeah, and people are just so easily bored and so easily unimpressed, and it's almost like uncool to be impressed or uncool to be 30 plus and enjoy yourself at a show and not be the cross-armed asshole in the back. And listen, I'm the cross-armed asshole.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I am front pack. I'm a flag bearer of the cross-armed asshole.
And you ask a cross-armed asshole, like, hey, man, what do you think of the show? And they go, it's so fucking incredible. And you're like, why are your arms crossed? Why are you scowling?
Well, what a thrill.
Yeah.
But, I mean, over there, and not just the UK, but for the most part around the world, it just seems that people enjoy themselves a bit more and just don't care what the guy next to him is going to think of him moshing at 38 years old or something. And that was one of the really, really coolest parts to see on this tour and on a lot of tours that I've been on recently is guys our age that went through the phase in our teen years, in our early 20s, and we lived it up at these shows, man. You know, whether you're drinking or you're a part of an anti-drinking sect, everybody, like, partied and had a good time. And whether you were moshing or crowd surfing or cross-arming it, everybody was in this, like, scene. And then there was late 20s, early 30s, where it was kind of uncool, and is that band really even cool anymore? And they're so old.
They're so derivative of the actual band.
And I don't necessarily want to spend money because I'm busting my ass to make $25, so is it really worth that? And then, like, do
not
I really want to share?
Daddy's money anymore. Yeah, so, you're spending your own money.
Right,
and
life is still tough because now you finally, like, just bought a house. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Late 30s, you finally got your shit together. You realize that spending the money is actually good quality life. Mm. So it is a value of much more value than you even understood when you were 20.
Yes.
And it's valuable to pay for the babysitter and get on out and mosh at a punk ska show and enjoy yourself and not give a shit about the rest of the world for an hour or for 4 hours.
Yep.
And seeing that relived with people that are on my level, because I'm doing that too. And, and I'm not saying that there was like a lull where I didn't enjoy being on stage, but I'm a fan too, and I went to shows too, and I picked and chose which show I would go to based on the same things that everybody else does. You know what I mean? And now the shows that I go to, I'm like, man, I'm just going to enjoy this because I'm reliving my youth, and I'm realizing that there's not as much of the future as with this band. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that in a
Dyson,
I'm not being morbid or cynical.
No, I'm 100% with you, and I think everybody reaches this point at a different time in their life, but there's a point that you reach where you're like just comfortable with who you are. And then at that point when you're like, I don't have anybody to impress, you know, like I am who I am and I'm comfortable with who I am. You start going, you know what? I don't think I want to like be on the side stage trying to watch the show to like have the optics of like, oh yeah, I'm cool with the band.
Maybe I'll get in one of the Instagram photos.
You're more like, maybe I want to stand like by the sound guy at front of house so I can hear the band as best as they can be.
Yeah.
Or maybe I want, you know what I mean? Like you're everything just kind of changes and you are just like, yeah, maybe I'm just going to go to the show. I don't care about being seen there. I don't care. Like, I'm just comfortable with who I am, and I'm going to go to what I want to go to, which is a cool place to be. I know for myself, I just hit that like 3 days ago, but I'm like finally just like, yeah, I'm just who I am. I don't give a shit, you know? Like, I'm just doing what I do. I finally feel like I actually am good at what I'm doing. So, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't feel like a failure in music anymore. I feel like it was like, I didn't get to where I wanted to go, but I had a good time and it's made me better at film and stuff like that. And like, so now when I go to shows, I'm like, I used to like want to be like, oh, I want to try and get backstage. Watch from the side stage, you know, that let people know I know people. But now I'm like, I mean, I still like to have that access so I can get a free water, but I like to be wherever the show sounds the best, you know?
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, it's like where the guy that's mixing this shit, it's right by him, you know? He's mixing for what he can hear, so.
Yeah, the people that, like, you see, even, like, friends or relatives show up and, like, oh, man, like, I can't wait to watch from side stage. I'm like, you know, people paid money to not be on the side stage. Like, the reason you paid money and that's where you stand is because that's where we're going to make it sound the best.
Right, right.
It sounds like
dog shit. It usually sounds
up
like
up
shit, right, yeah.
Yeah,
you get the mix of the guitarist or wherever you are, you know, you get their mix basically, which doesn't sound good.
We're not charging anybody to be back here because it ain't worth it.
Yeah.
And people are going to figure out that it's not worth it really quickly. Yeah, but it's cool too. And again, being touring professionally for almost 20 years now, I've had the friends and the family that always insisted on being on the side.
Yeah.
And even them nowadays will be like, cool, I'll catch you after the show. And, and they'll go outside because they know that, like, why did I drive all this way to not actually see the show?
It, right. It's exciting the first time. I'm sure you got to do it, you know, just find somebody to latch on to, leech in, and get in there. But once you do it once, you're like, okay. You find that it's cooler to be where it's meant to be.
Yeah,
you know
you're like older and experienced as far as like the touring goes when all of the bands, anytime one of the band members would watch another band on this last tour, and I'm just referencing this tour because it just happened so many times, they'd always go, man, you guys sound fucking great from front of house.
Because the
Lesson Jake guys would be like, man, that show in Manchester was amazing. Front of house sounded incredible. They were not watching from the side stage because they want to see like how the band's rolling. So they'll go to the balcony or go to the front of house, like you said, and see what it sounds like, where it's supposed to sound the best. And
and that tour seemed like you guys were all genuine fans of each other's bands.
For sure, man.
So it must have been fun to be. I mean, it's probably fun to play with new bands too and like dig on their sound, but like to get to, I mean, you know, Lesson Jake's like an institution. You're going on tour with them, you get to see them, and I'm sure they feel the same way about Goldfinger, you know what I mean? And like it's got to be fun to watch people, you know.
It's
do
fun.
Their thing.
It's fun to be in a professional setting, lifting one another up where there's no competition and you're with all people that not only have like done something that you respect and that you like, but are like still standing, and not just because they're a good band, but because they're good people. So a lot of the even good bands that were full of shitheads do not tour so much anymore.
Yeah, because they kind of fall off and then... Yeah.
And, like, the tours have become so small where, like, bands need packages like a Less Than Jake, Save Ferris, Goldfinger, like, combo.
It's cool that people figured that out, to package those things together, to make it the point to get the babysitter and, you know... Yeah.
Right, and they do that, but guys don't want to tour with guys they don't like. So they're not going to invite that band.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason bands don't get invited on other tours and things. So, like, yes, sometimes it's just business.
Right.
But sometimes, like, when you have other things to do, business needs to be a little bit of pleasure, too. We want to be doing something that we love to do, and you want to do it with people that you somewhat get to choose. And that's the lovely thing about how some of these tours have really worked out, especially this one. This one was all old-school friends that have supported one another, that are happy to see each other and spend time with one another, and then at the same time, you know, get to help out. It's not easy being away from family. Almost everyone has kids.
Right.
So if you're going to be away from your family, you better be with some people you really respect and like. And it, like I said, everybody's still standing. These are some of the few, we are the few fortunate people that are still standing and still touring, playing these songs.
So when you're 20 and you are on a label and you're going on tour in support of an album, I think probably at some point early, probably right as Story of the Year was breaking, probably started to fall apart shortly thereafter. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you had the ability to choose who wanted to go on tour with you. Like, oh, hey, we want to help this band. We want to go with this band, and things are going well in the music industry. And they're like, yeah, sure, you can bring that band. You got to have this band too, but... At some point, it seemed like that melted away, and it was like, unless you're a platinum artist, you're not. I got to pay this guy back, and I can't believe that we're even holding this tour together. And we got to, and it's all these like favors. And because when I grew up listening to music, I would always hear these stories of like Newfound Glory just broke some band because they're like, hey, we saw you. You opened for us as a local talent. We liked you. So, hey, come play this leg of the tour. And I feel like as I was watching that happened less and less and less, and it was because. People, the industry was changing. People were trying to figure out how to still make money in it, and it was like there was no room for handouts, you know, to grabbing somebody and pulling them up. And then at this point now, it's like you guys all are successful in other ways, other things. So you're not a 20-year-old who's like, I have no life except this band. You're like, yeah, I have the band, but I also am a morning show DJ, and I'm also have another band, and I also do 1,000 different things, and I'm killing it. I'm a producer, I'm a whatever. Like, everybody fell into their other things. So now when you go on tour, you're like, yeah, we get to choose who we go on tour with. We're gonna make it fun for ourselves, and a label doesn't get to tell us who we go with.
Is there a question in there?
Nope. I just want you to say, yep, you're right.
Yeah, well, you covered a lot of ground, and in 18 years the music industry has grown like 100 years, or we'll say changed in like a so many different ways. So when it comes to making albums, or when it comes to having multiple jobs, or needing to have multiple jobs, or even the stigma that comes with that, like, remember, back in the day, that was like a bad thing. Like, oh, do you hear so-and-so is making guitars now? And, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so it was like,
oh,
well, obviously they're doing terrible.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of fell away. And with the touring, you were right. Like, I mean, there's countless stories of, you know, like a Papa Roach, Alien Ant Farm connection, and like you said, Newfound, and so and so, and I know we tried to bring bands that we were fans of or friends with. Like, I was a massive Anne Boleyn fan when they were like a little Christian band that I saw at a festival, and I just really wanted to watch them live. And the only way I'd be able to do that is to take them on tour.
You guys had a lot of tour with
and
them,
I
right?
Convinced,
a lot of shows. Yeah.
I convinced our manager to let me like fill the opening slot of our big tour because we had had. The other two bands, one that just signed with Warner, My Chemical Romance, who was gonna make their mark and gonna be the break, so they were second slot, and we had done a thing with Lost Prophets, which isn't fun to talk about anymore. but at the
reverse shout out to Lost Prophets.
At the time, they were doing well, so it was a perfect like a direct support to this tour. So our manager said, yeah, fill it, and I was the most passionate one about a particular band, so the band just let me. Say who was going to be on that tour, and Anne Boleyn was on that tour, and the rest is history. They did super well, and they returned the favor, and I sang for them for a while.
Yep.
So, like, those kind of things happened a lot easier back then. But that was also like a totally different business where the label and the artist had a bit more of a relationship or a bit more of a connection.
Right.
Like with Fred Durst and Staind. You know, that dude became an A&R guy. That was like somewhat typical.
Right. Because those kind of jobs still existed.
Right. Yeah, that stuff has narrowed drastically. The walls have closed in very Star Wars trash compactor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so there's a more narrow door in. And even a stranger door out.
There are less key holders, less gatekeepers.
There are less gatekeepers,
which is good because then more people have a chance. But then once you get to that point past the gate, there's less there because there's so much competition. You know what I mean? Or no?
Yeah, I think they have a completely different checklist now.
Yeah, but I'm saying like you can make a really great sounding song at home with software you illegally downloaded on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the case.
No, not at all.
In 2005, if you wanted to sound good, you had to go to...
You somewhat needed more people.
Right. And it's just kind of deteriorated and eroded from that, which is cool because it democratizes music and you get more interesting sounds and stuff like that. But just from my perspective, like, it makes it a little bit less special when you get to that point, though, because it's not like, and now you're set for life. It's like, and now you can work for the rest of your, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to be grinding, you know, unless a very, very small percentage of musicians now get to just, you know, get a golden goose, right? I mean, it's like, you're working. I mean, I know you personally work your ass off. You're always working, and you're super successful in what you do. And I would be like, in my head, like, well, he's, you know, Greek Fire, Goldfinger. I mean, I'm like, this guy probably sleeps 12 hours a day. Right. I think you sleep 3 hours a day. So
yeah, it's about 3 or 4. This is the hardest working period of my life. The past.
It's good for your body. They say 3 or 4 hours is good.
I've aged more in the last 6 years than I had in 14 years before that.
Well, in the last 2 months for sure with that beard. I mean,
this is not my fault. I lost a bet. I have to explain that everywhere.
I see it on Instagram. T-shirt. Every Instagram post is like,
well, you know why? Because I hit the stage the first night and my Goldfinger buddies are like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like,
oh, they had Moon's dad came out to play.
Dude,
that's cool.
It's not that I look older, which I do because I got the silver that I earned, by the way, in my beard. But like, it's just not a punk look. It's more of a metal look or whatever, a fucking Mumford and Sons look.
Like
a country guy that's like kind of country, but not, but he's like still trying to get the roots look to it. You know, I look like, I look like a completely different human being than I've marketed myself in the past 20 years.
Mm.
Other than like one Warped Tour where I was bored and grew a beard.
Sure.
So it's a bit off-putting to the punk community to see somebody that looks like me go up there and rock Superman.
So you're going on record as saying that the punk community likes smooth-faced men.
I never had thought about it before until my whole band was like, what the fuck, dude? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, it's, you know, it's just a thing. At least it's not Christmas. You know, I got another 92 days of this.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, but look at all of us. Line us up. And I went, oh, shit, you're right. I don't look like I belong.
Oh, come on.
I look like I'm
Well,
visiting.
Once you get up on stage, you look like, I mean, you when you hit those.
It's fine. Yeah, and it's
there.
Fine. And I'm doing my job,
you're
obviously. And I'm and whatever. But, I mean, to their point, I understood what they were saying.
I
understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
Especially because this band has gone through, you know, a couple different member changes, and we have somewhat of a rotating cast at drummer because Travis Barker does the records, but he is on tour with Blink. And
he does a few other things besides Goldfinger.
Right.
There's
so
one or two. Yeah.
Right. So he's our number one guy, but we have a different drummer. So consistency with Goldfinger is somewhat key, and me, Mike, and John are very, very consistent. And Charlie, the original guitar player, has been back for the past like 6 months with us.
I said, yeah, you guys played St. Louis, and he was there. I was like, is that the OG
Charlie?
Back. Hey,
so
which he's great, by the way. All the, you know, it didn't miss a beat.
Yeah,
he
and me
great.
And Mike from MXPX have been in the band for years, and it's me, Mike, and John, and all the promo photos from the last number of years. So consistency with Goldfinger is like kind of important. I mean, it's kind of not, but it kind of is with our band, especially the way we've been sounding the last couple of years. It's been really on the mark.
Yeah.
And so when John sees like, fuck, now we got this guy that looks like we got another guy, like he's kind of bummed about it. And I totally understand that.
Yeah.
From being the front man and leader of another band. Like,
Which we'll talk about.
Yeah, I understand that. So yeah, this beard is kind of in the way. But you know what? At the same time, I'm just sort of owning the punishment. And this morning show is such a massive part of my life.
Yes.
And such a massive part of St. Louis that...
number one. Yeah, shout out to the Rizzuto show.
Number one morning show. So I had to tell them, like, guys, this, I know it sounds silly, but this is very important to my life and what I do.
Yeah.
And for me to own this is another big important thing for this... For this show and for everything I do. And they respect my all-encompassing career and work ethic.
The hustle, yeah.
It was fine.
That's one thing about the Goldfinger guys. It seems like everybody's got a hustle. I mean, there's a...
Everyone is an ass buster.
Yeah,
and
right?
And the cool thing is we all respect each other.
Yeah, because you see it in each other and you're like, I get it. Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
and
that's
cool. We get on really well. John, like... put together the perfect band, and the drummers that we have the tour with us other than Travis, like, are all just ridiculously skilled, awesome people, great to tour with, easy guys that are hustlers themselves.
I imagine that John Feldman has a pretty wide Rolodex of musicians that he has phone numbers for that he can call to.
Yeah, for sure. But you'd be surprised on how, like, there's a lot of boxes to tick, and there's literally only a handful of people that would be trusted
to
like jump into that scenario with that high speed and high velocity.
It's
of intensity. We don't rehearse.
Honestly,
we don't.
Right.
And he'll throw songs at us on stage with less than a second's notice that some of us haven't heard.
Yeah.
So, like,
and you kind of just like,
for drummers, it's stress out. It's not your gig, bro.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Let's stop talking about your beard and talk about your band.
All right.
Greek Fire. A lot of news about that. One of the reasons that I pushed you to the front, I was like, we got to talk about this music video that I made, because that's really the only thing that matters. Can we do the? Here's the thing. It'll already have premiered by the time that this thing comes out.
Right.
So we'll just say it's already out, and you can go see it on YouTube. Link in the description. But what are we doing? What's the song?
The song is "True Colors," the old Cyndi Lauper iconic "True Colors," and obviously Phil Collins did a version that I'm sure we probably heard first in our.
I didn't know it was Cyndi Lauper. I thought it was Phil Collins, and then I mean, this is a year ago, and then you were like, you know, the old Cyndi Lauper, and I'm like, you mean the Phil Collins?
Because
you know, I don't know anything, so there we go.
Well, Greek Fire took a crack at it, which actually is a really, really cool story. We did one of those crowdfunding campaigns for our last record, Lost, or our EP. And one of the things was because we were doing like fun little acoustic jams in the house, in the rehearsal space, in different places, and we would just put them up on YouTube, and we'd say, hey, you want to request a song, we'll just do it. And that helped, like, you know, pay for us doing Lost. And
that's a fun idea.
Yeah, one of our fans said, hey, I would love to see you sing True Colors. And we were discussing when we were going to do it, and I was in the studio with our late great friend Matt Amelung.
I'm going to cry.
Yeah, and
shout out to Matt Amelung.
Yeah, dude, me and Matt were just sitting there, and I told him that we were going to do True Colors, and he was like, man, someday we should do like a cool version of that. And I was like, well, let's do it now. So in the studio, instead of doing like the acoustic thing, he and I just kind of said, well, you know, which version did you know, Phil Collins or Cyndi Lauper or both? Did they both have the same effect? And I was like, the Phil Collins one was so big to me. But then when I heard the Cyndi Lauper one later in my childhood, it was one of those moments where I understood how a completely different approach to a production or an arrangement or any of that doesn't necessarily take a spirit out of a song and can actually just sort of change the spirit and alter it and make it give you different feelings that you didn't even think were possible with that lyric set or those chord set or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That was one of the first examples of like, oh my gosh, a song can literally be done completely differently and give me equally cool feelings. Very different, but equally cool feelings.
I was just at the gym, and I heard this heavy metal song, and I was like, this is cool. And I was like, oh, shit, this is a cover of a Katy Perry song.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It was so good. And I'm like, different.
And sometimes I think it's rare that two artists can pull off something so magnificent with one song set. Yeah. But that was a good example. So when we were talking it through, I was like, dude, I would really like to do almost like a movie soundtrack sounding version, like a spacey sounding. You know that movie Oblivion? It's like I think. Yeah, so it's Tom Cruise and Morgan Freeman. It's not the most tremendous film, but it's got a really cool little score from M83.
There's a lot to like about that visually, at least. A lot to like about that movie.
I like the feeling and the color of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've talked about this before, but one of the things that Matt always respected in my approach to song stuff in making music was I forget the name of it right now, but I have something where I see sounds in colors, or I describe sounds in colors.
Oh yeah, I can't remember the name of that thing.
Yeah, it's more common than I thought when I thought I was the only one, because every time I would explain it to a producer, they go, "Dude, you're fucking dumb. Like, can you just explain it in notes
dyslexic.
Or something?" And I would say, "Yeah, but I'm looking for a tone that's more yellow. I need a yellow tone, and I need a blue tone, and I wanted this song to sound gray." And that was how I...
That's how you talked to me when we were doing stuff. And
yes,
I was
that's
like,
how I spoke.
So Hollywood.
Right, yeah, that's so dumb. Like, nobody understands that language in Hollywood either. But not nobody. But so when I was talking to
Matt... It's a real thing. You're not crazy, yeah.
Yeah, Matt always made me feel like comfortable. Even though he didn't speak that language, he made me feel comfortable in helping me find the tones and the colors that I was describing.
Mm.
And he sort of started to understand my language real well. So by this point, I said, I really want like... a soft black gray underpinning of this really colorful, sort of airy, breathy, on top vocal, where I want the piano to almost sound like a child's toy.
Mm.
But I want it to sound like this. I want it to sound like Oblivion looks.
Yeah.
And I showed him clips from the movie. I said, "You see these colors in this trailer and in this? I want it to sound, to look like that in the sound. And then let's put a very like blue, red, and yellow, like a primary color vocal over it."
Yeah.
And I know this all sounds like total Japanese to somebody that's not getting it, but if you watch the video or listen to the song and hear what I just said, maybe it connects with you. That's how I can translate my desire for connection into a musical tone. And Matt and I just did it. The band didn't even hear it.
Right. Yeah.
And Matt and I did it, and I did everything on the keyboard. And we threw some drum loops together, and we sort of colored the drum loops to get a certain tone. And we just did a song, and I was like, "Holy shit, this is fucking awesome. We should put this on a record."
I'm so connected to you in that story because a secret thing, I did like 7 or 8 songs with Matt, just he and I, in the exact same way you're describing. So, you know, I'm the film guy, video guy. So I said, "Let's write all these songs. Like, I want to tell you the treatment for the video that I want to eventually make. And then let's listen to the story arc of it, and then let's find the sounds that reinforce that." Instead of like, "Let's write a song and then make a music video to it," it was like, "I've got a music video, help me write a song to it."
Yeah.
And so listening to you say that this exact same, like, I literally said, "This song's going to be all red." Like, the whole thing is going to be red.
So you probably have that too. It's
dude, I'm... this morning,
synesthesia. I think
synesthesia. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I was gonna say Tunisia. I was like, it sounds like Tunisia. It's synesthesia.
Country.
Yeah. This morning, I was taking a shower, and I just had a profound moment of sadness because I thought about, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna be talking with Moon today," and then I thought about music. Moon plays music, and then I thought about Matt Amlung is music to me. You know.
Yeah.
And that's the fucking worst part about him passing away, is that he's ruined music in a way for me, because every time I think about, anytime I enjoy something, I think about him and about how much I miss him. And
yeah, me too.
It's a fucked up thing.
Me too.
Which, by the way, you guys played this is a hard left veer, but you guys played a show at his memorial. I don't know if that's the right term, but a remembering show with him. It was an incredible bill of all, not all, but a small piece, but heavy hitters of bands that whom he affected and whom affected him. Mm-hmm. The show was incredible. And we, Ben from episode one, and I and Joey made these little, like, sort of the band's remembering. I think we called, like, Greek Fire Remembers Matt Amlung, something like that. Anyway, I'll put the links to those in this below. There's a ton of them. But they're so fun listening to you and Johnny and Mark and listening to everybody and all the bands talk about their connection to him. Fuck, it's heavy. I watch them and I cry every time. I get teared up. But I just appreciate so much that everybody made the time to do those, because like that's a cool thing for us to have and to listen. You may have never met X, Y, or Z band that Matt did, but you know, you listen to it and you're like, oh yeah, same shit, you know, same guy, same hijinks, you know. So that was a fun project, and we'll put the links in those in this too, so you can check those out.
Obviously, the ultimate sadness is that we lost like a good dude and a good friend and somebody that was so effective in our community and our scene and to so many people on a personal level and a not personal level.
Yeah.
But something that made me so sad during that period was that like we didn't get together and do that when he was here.
Right.
I know that's not something that's even like you just don't do that. That's not something that happens in this world, and I understand that. It just made me really sad that he didn't I don't know what the word is, like reap the benefits, or I mean
he had
he didn't get to see.
Yeah.
And none of us do. I guess that's right. The sadness in all of this is this was just like a really in front of your face example, like
we
a very flyered version.
So we could, because yeah, because that's the only way,
like,
you know.
None
you
of
have...
us get to see the actual effect. Like Prince didn't see all the people crying for him and Bowie and this and that. Like maybe people do, and maybe that doesn't. Ultimately, it doesn't fucking matter. Maybe it shouldn't matter, or maybe it does. I don't know the whole legacy thing, and like to see how you've affected people. I don't think it matters to me anymore. It mattered to me when I was young. It's one of the driving forces that I had as an artist is I needed
mark.
To leave a mark.
Right.
I needed to like leave something for my children to understand me in ways that I couldn't explain to them at whatever age, or because of my, you know, my difficulties or my fears or whatever it may be. And I'm over that. I think I'm in a very healthy state with that, personally speaking. But man, it makes it so sad when your friends don't get to see what they actually meant to you. That, you know, and this is obviously the typical just blanket of what everybody deals with when they lose anyone in any scenario is, I wish I'd have said this, or I wish I'd have done this. But man, it was just like, it was so very, very cool to see people that you know never met Matt crying for him because they were explained, very directly explained by all these bands and all these people, like what this guy actually did for our town and what he did for music and musicians and friends of yours that otherwise may not even be still playing guitar but are now actually somewhat successful because Matt helped them, coach them, and like did their first band demo or something, or suggested that maybe they should be in this band instead, or just some little thing that he did. It was really cool to see people actually get to have that explained to them, because most people don't get that opportunity.
Nobody, I think, would think of a producer as a public servant, but I see so much servitude in what he did, because for me, I mean, it was purely that artistic escape that keeps you mentally healthy. I think for so many people that he worked with, he was that piece, that like bright spot in there. I got to work my shitty job. I got to deal with X, Y, and Z thing. But when I'm in the studio,
I
get to get all this aggression and feelings and anger and excitement and joy that I have that I put into the song. I get to create that with this person. And I think it's such a healthy thing for people to be able to do. And he was the conduit for that. And so, I mean, you know, it's a really fucked up, sad thing for St. Louis that, you know, that is why we're talking. I didn't want to talk about, I mean, not want to talk. We wasn't planning on talking about this, but it just finds its way in, because anybody that knows him, you're going to talk about it. You're going to be like, oh, yeah, fuck.
Yeah. And he was hugely instrumental in Greek Fire.
Yep.
And not just Greek Fire, the Greek Fire that you hear on Spotify or whatever. He was hugely
available now at Spotify, Tidal, and
but like he was hugely influential on allowing me and the band to find its voice and to find what wasn't right for us, or what was right for us, what might be a good idea in the future, or something like that. Like because he was a friend, and because he made efforts to understand my language. You know, I've worked with Feldman. Greek Fire has done some songs with Feldman, and Feldman is so fast-paced and such upper echelon that he's not going to have necessarily time to get to, and I don't fault him, to even like try to care to understand my fucking color language.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's not his, that's not the business he's in.
Right.
And I'm not saying Matt is a lower echelon for being able to do that. He was just the personality style. He was able to give me that. And thank God, like as a friend and as a working partner, that was very important for Greek Fire, because the way that I needed Greek Fire to sound was difficult to express in a lot of areas. So even the songs that we did with Feldman wouldn't sound like they did if it weren't for me being able to work out some things with a guy that was willing to actually respect me and listen to me as a resource.
Right.
And Matt was big on that, whether you were a 16-year-old kid that just picked up a guitar that gave him a couple hundred bucks to record something, or a guy that sold a few million records that was like, I don't want to go to California. I want to record here with a St. Louis guy and include him and see what we can do here.
Yeah, and there's kind of, I think there's an element of, you know, that reaching the hand down, you know, like, hey, I mean, there's value in you getting to stay here and all that, but you're like, dude, you know, we're going to keep it in St. Louis. We're going to, you know, give this guy an opportunity. I mean, that's what progress is about in anything. I mean, you get to where you're going because people help you out. They reach the hand down and pull you up. And I'm sure it feels good in some way, whether you consciously or subconsciously felt that way, to be able to be like, hey, yeah, I want to give you an opportunity to do something that we can do great together. I mean, that's happening for me a lot right now. And I'm grateful for every opportunity. I'm grateful for you taking the time to do this. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a help when somebody makes the time, you know?
Yeah,
his time is precious, and you know.
We talked with Matt a lot about that, because Matt had the skill and the desire to become a massive producer.
Yeah, he didn't have the gold records and the platinum records. That was the only thing he didn't have, because he had the talent and he had the experience.
But and he would have got there. He would.
That's the saddest thing.
And everybody knew that.
I know.
And we knew that in the beginning. And even if we didn't, we're like, wow, this guy has so much potential. And all we said was, hey, you know, he would say, oh, it'll only take this. And we'll say, well, we'll try to give you more if we can give you more, so you don't forget us about us when we're like hurting and need to make a record on the cheap, and
right,
you're doing it for
right.
$25,000 a song.
Yep.
You cut your boys from St. Louis a break.
Yeah.
It's this continual give and take, because everyone's passing one another on the ladder. And being from St. Louis, and coming from a point where we saw other bands help one another, the Urge guys help other bands constantly. The Urge guys continually put local bands, from Disturbing the Peace to all my other friends
in
Lindbergh.
Shout out to Disturbing the Peace.
They would always put them on, and that was really key in my brain. Like, these guys don't need anything from Disturbing the Peace or any of their friends or their brothers' bands or any of that kind of stuff. But these are good bands that they're willing to help.
And you're not going to be on the top for forever. And so when you fall from the top, you better hope that the person who's at the top is a friend and not an enemy or an unknown.
Yeah, and we saw that, and I saw that, especially being a South County kid, I saw that directly at the exact same time that St. Louis was going through this really competitive, like, fuck you, other local bands sort of vibe.
And there was only a few spots, and so everybody thought we got to get to that spot.
And I hated that.
Sure.
So when we were on top of the scene and on top of the world, we brought every St. Louis band that we could, dude. Oh, yeah, I didn't mean that. But,
yeah, you did.
No, I really
didn't.
Get
it out on iTunes,
really
top
didn't.
Of the world.
When we were there, we did that because we felt like we weren't doing it for karma points or for cred or to be cool in St. Louis or something. It was legitimately like, these are good people and we have access to help them.
Yep.
So why?
It sounds
like we're bragging or we did
much.
It consciously.
No, yeah.
It wasn't even a conscious thing. It was so drilled into our head that this is what you do when you have the bread, you share the bread.
Right.
And that was important. And the same thing went into Matt. Like, we saw a skilled guy that was willing to work hard that we knew that was going to surpass us. Why wouldn't you? Like, you can help him, and he's going to help you. So, like, it was a very just St. Louis-y thing. And Matt did that, too. Matt passed it on, and he gave breaks to tons of bands that should have paid him way more money to do all the work that he had to do to polish those turds of songs.
Woo!
And he still did it.
Yeah.
And he did it wonderfully. And it was sorry to go on a tangent there, but I don't know, man. Like, I just hope that the St. Louis scene does something, and we can put ourselves on the map in a different way. You know, I mean, you hear those stories about Seattle 90s bands and 80s bands, and they legitimately, like, did sort of band together, and there was a scene there.
Yeah.
And yeah, you hear the horror stories here and there and the competitive nature of just human beings. But there was like a real deal thing there. We wouldn't be talking about Seattle grunge or this or that
right.
if they didn't actually have this powerhouse of a collective scene that did take over an MTV playlist and, yep. And a cultural movement. And I think that we can do that if we have the attitude that our bands and you and Matt and Ben and this radio station in general sort of has. I think we can do something. We just need a couple like real crazy people in the forefront.
Yeah, more opportunities equals more camaraderie. It's easy when it seems like there's only a few things available for everybody mm-hmm. to, and I think that is what's cool about where music is at in 2019 is there's more opportunities, you know, and so that means you don't have to get butthurt just because because X, Y, or Z slot was taken, because there's so many other ways to make it now,
yeah,
and to do well that like really it's like, oh yeah, I got this thing, oh you got that thing over there, hey maybe we could switch and like you could help me get that thing and I could help you get this thing, like those things exist now instead of
There's a lot of difficult things about the new business model or where the business model is, but one of the coolest things and one of the things that I think is maybe the biggest positive of where we are right now is that there's not that many credibility police officers out there. When we grew up in the 90s and all that, like credibility was this crazy issue. I remember our band turned down like really, really smart things to do. We turned them down. Oh, Spider-Man 2. I've talked about that before.
You were like, I don't know if this superhero thing is going to be a big thing. Superhero movies, I don't see them.
Yeah, well, it wasn't about that. It was just like some people had a real, real big issue with credibility.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, lame
quote,
yeah.
You can't buy back credibility, man. Like that, right. That happened. Like, would Nirvana do a Pepsi commercial? Like, fuck that. First
they
of all, it's not
still
1994.
Alive, they would.
Yeah, in 2004, they probably would have.
Commercial right
Foo Fighters
now.
Is fucking doing
that's
it.
That's right.
You know, but like, what I'm saying is.
Yeah,
and I'm,
it's a
and that's
time.
And that's nobody's
yeah.
fault.
Made sense then.
2004
sense
was
then.
A really hard time to navigate those decisions. Being 90s kids, we were 80s and 90s
right.
kids that grew up with the whole Nirvana wouldn't do a Pepsi commercial thing grilled into our head. And we even had a manager at the time that was saying you can't buy back credibility. So
right.
he came from the Guns N' Roses time
when
credibility was legitimate gold.
Yep.
And not that credibility isn't now. I'm just what I'm saying is the police that are there to define what credibility actually is, and then to enforce that somehow on pop culture and how records are bought or sold, that really doesn't exist in the same way. So a lot of the stuff I'm saying, if you're under 30, probably doesn't even, like, I'm just garbling a whole bunch of syllables to you. So what I mean is, and my point, I'm sorry, I'm long-winded.
Happens with age.
Is that right now, you don't have to worry about this collab or that collab or that collab or whatever it may be having a price or like a consequence.
Yeah, it's just do cool shit.
Yeah, if you're a young kid that has a computer and some country boy wants to come out and do something and then you're like, oh, maybe I should work with this rapper and all that, like you can try so much.
Are you talking
now.
About that Billy Ray Cyrus song?
No, I wasn't, but
but that song is the heat.
I wasn't, but yeah, but
you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that kid's
that wouldn't happen back. You'd be like, I don't know,
right?
You know,
and even that had a little bit of backlash here with the country, with the country charts and all that kind of stuff. But what I'm saying is, on a ground level, when you're like figuring yourself out, look at Machine Gun Kelly.
Right.
That
sure.
kid, that kid was doing Warped, and when I was doing Warped, in like I think Greek Fire was on 2012 or 2013, and he was on that tour. Or maybe it was the year before. I don't really remember. But we would see him doing some of the same stages we were doing, and it was not working. If I'm being honest, like it wasn't great. And I don't mean his songs weren't great, because I don't remember that.
I just
remember watching something that
crowd
I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is okay. And I'm not sure if I get it. But that kid is an ass buster. And he stayed out there in L.A., and he did so much. And he was able to try so much that eventually he lands a deal, playing Tommy Lee in this movie, and he crushes it. That kid fucking crushed it in that movie. And then he does this, and he does that, and now he's starting to burst with this emo kid rap.
Yep.
And it works. But that kid, like, deserves it.
Right.
He worked so hard and tried so many different avenues, and I'm not sure that had been possible, near possible, in the 90s for you to try that many avenues, because one thing would have happened and somewhat defined you.
Right.
And then when you were seen doing something else, your credibility is called into question,
right,
which is bullshit.
Right, you're
just some artist that's trying to make a living,
right,
and get to whatever rung that you feel is whatever. And you're doing things as hard working guy as you can.
Well, and I think that back in the day, you used to have albums, right? Like, you'd have to do an album, and it'd have to be pressed, and there was, like, and then there's this gap in between your first album and your second album, and now it's like, you can do a single and throw it up, and it's on Spotify and iTunes Music and everything and the next day, and you want to do another single, you can do it 2 weeks later. And, I mean, in the rap world, right, that's what they do. They put out, like, a mixtape of, like, 40 songs, like, singles. It doesn't, it's like, you don't have to wait to prove your, like, oh, that thing wasn't for you? Don't worry, in 3 weeks, I got something else coming out. I got a new music, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, in 2 years, we'll try again, see if it's your thing.
Think,
you know?
Think of some of the most talented people you knew as, let's say, underground artists or something in the 90s or even the 2000s, or friends that you know that are so talented, and they pieced together something and they threw it out there and they got signed and they did a release or something. It was like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, you got this big Tyrannosaurus Rex out there, and if it doesn't go, if it doesn't stick, and if it doesn't really blow up, it's sort of over, and they come home and they do different jobs, and the music is over for them. Now it's almost like this Velociraptor sort of thing where you're just testing the fences.
Right.
You fucking bat. you know what I'm saying? Like,
You're
just testing the fences until your motherfucking ass is out and you are king of the jungle.
Right.
So it's like, it's a really cool, that's where it's a really cool opportunity, I think, for young artists, that you don't really have to figure out necessarily who you are as a 19 or 20-year-old artist.
Just try it out.
Because you can try that, and maybe you blow as a country rapper at 23, and maybe that doesn't work, and at 25 you're like a punk rocker or something.
You're not held down to that thing that you tried.
Yeah,
don't let
anybody tell you what your line of integrity is or where your credibility matters or any of that. That's so dumb. If you're an artist that's just trying to get out there and connect with the world through music or through art, just do as much of it as you can and see what you're really good at. And if you get successful, pat yourself on the back. Fuck everybody else, man. Don't worry about any of the credibility police remnants that are still around, because fuck those people.
You heard it here first.
You just have to feed yourself and your children or whoever you're responsible for. Those people don't matter. If they call into question your integrity or your credibility, as long as what you've done and what you've put out is not below your line of integrity, as long as you didn't do it for false reasons
or for
the wrong reasons in your heart or in your conviction, fuck those people, man.
Yep. Hashtag just, fuck those people.
Just roll and enjoy life. Like, I just obviously I'm speaking a bit of pent up stuff from the past 20 years, but I see people get really discouraged that are talented, more talented than me.
Sure.
And they get discouraged because they crushed and it just didn't do well.
Right.
And that hurt them and they stopped.
Yeah, that's a tragedy to the world to not get to hear those people's, you know, potential seen through. Yeah.
I don't even know how we started that. I just hijacked that one too. But.
No, it's fine. It's good. That's what it's all about. Okay. I just wanted to just talk about True Colors, but I guess we won't do that.
It was great
having you. So True Colors, it's coming out. We're gonna premiere. It's already premiered. Can we talk about where it's premiering? It already will have, but
Alternative Press did a big premiere for it. Loved the video. Loved the video.
Dude, I just watched it. So we shot it. Like a year ago, almost.
Was it a year?
I don't know.
It was a long time ago.
It was like 6 years ago, and we you called me yesterday and said, "Hey, all right, whatever." Serendipitously, we talked, and you said, "Hey, we're premiering the video." And dude, I love Alternative Press. I mean, that was like what I grew up on. So it's so cool that they're premiering it. They already have premiered it. And so I rewatched the video. And like, it's fucking
great, man.
Cool. Like
you guys
killed it. When we shot it at the Angad, is that Angad?
Yeah, Angad Arts Hotel.
Which when we shot it there, they were just even taking bookings.
They had not opened yet.
Okay. All right. So
they had not opened yet. Did I call him and smooth that?
No, so Joey, shout out to Joey Goldsmith, he had just shot a fashion thing there. You
That's
did call
right.
them, but
yeah.
he had just done a fashion thing there, and we were talking about locations to shoot this thing, this True Colors thing, and Joey's like, yeah, I just shot this thing at this place, and each different room is a different color. And I was like, did you say color? And then so we call you, and you're like, well, I don't know how we're going to get it, and you're like, let me do my thing. You call them up and fucking sweet talk them, and they kind of reluctantly at first, they're like, you know, I mean, I feel like some credentials had to be dropped
yeah,
to like
sure.
let them know like this isn't some bullshit.
I sweet talked hard, and the bosses there did not want us to be a part of anything. They
That's
did
right.
not want to give us access. They did not want anything. But shout out to the gal that worked there,
oh, Leslie,
that got us in. She made this happen.
Yeah.
She saw that there was a vision. She saw that we were serious. She saw that we were passionate artists and that we had a good
track record.
Yeah. And she liked the idea. And
yeah.
she gave us way more hours than we were supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And it was a magnificent pooling of resources extremely fast. We pulled off something that looks like a $2 million video. That was not that.
it was that, nickels, that and week, we shot it in 6 hours. We were yeah, in and out in
that,
6 hours.
1 week before, we were working on a completely different concept at a different place with different people.
That's right.
And that day, we had, what was it, four actors?
Mm-hmm.
Four actors.
That was all like, who do you know?
Yeah.
We need so-and-so archetype. Who do you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I just shot this other thing with this chick. Let me call her. I'm at my bar. You're like, I'm at my barber, and he's got a niece.
Yeah.
And she sounds like she might work. And we're like, yeah, I learned something. I try to really, you know, take something and set aside something that I learned from every shoot, you know, like yeah. to encapsulate, like
curious now. What did you learn?
Here's
from
what
this?
I learned.
Because we've worked a few times together, and every time you go, I don't know how the hell we fucking did this.
Yeah. So this is what I learned from that shoot in particular is all the planning in the world. I mean, I've done videos where it's a 6 month process, and they turn out. I'm really genuinely proud of everything that I do until like 6 months later, and then it fades a little bit. But you know, we did that so quickly, and it proved to me that you don't have to spend 6 months to make something incredible. Sometimes lightning strikes, just like writing a song. Sometimes it takes 6 months to write a really great song. Sometimes you write it in 6 minutes and everything is done. And both are fine, but I try to keep myself out of like the idea of like, well, I need more time to really craft this thing, and like, it's, you know, we got to get so and so, I need X amount of dollars. Like, I'm like, no, if something is hot, if the passion is there, if the people involved if everybody is nodding their head going, fuck yeah, this is going to be great, it can be great. And that's how I feel about True Colors. Like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
just, and it was everything, everybody somehow got on the same page real quick. And like Johnny, like everybody had to like ditch like your job. Like I gotta get
yeah,
up, bounce
yeah.
out a couple hours early, and we nailed it. And I'm really excited for people to see it. So check out the link in the description. It's gonna be there.
Yeah, the video is never. You are never gonna be able to tell from watching that video the stress and intensity of every single minute. I mean, it was from one room to the next doing this, and you go here because we only have 6 minutes to pull this off, and that was an hour job, and blah blah blah, and oh my god, we need an extension cord in this room, and somebody get over here. I mean, it was insane. But don't sell yourself short in the fact that it is really all about the people. And
sure.
the preparedness of the people. Those 6 minute songs, yeah, they come together in 6 minutes and they seem like they're magic and the Lord just like toss it to you.
Yeah.
But you have developed over years, you know, months, years, whatever, decades sometimes, a skill set that has allowed you to then use that little butterfly net and catch that gift
sure.
from God in that light, catch that lightning in a bottle. Because, yeah, we all know the lightning strikes all the time.
Right.
But to develop the skill set to know exactly when and how to bottle that is a very big thing. It's what sets successful artists usually aside from the guys that want to be successful artists.
Mm.
It's the 10,000 hours or you know the decade of sacrificing social life and all that to get great at the bass or to get great at whatever.
That's right.
That when somebody calls you and needs you and you know that rock star movie moment where somebody pulls you up on stage, you better shred that shit because you got 60 seconds to shred it. That doesn't just happen to anybody.
Right.
Great actors take improv classes for years and years. So when when that moment is upon them, that lightning strikes and it seems magical and it seems like a miracle. But that is the miracle that is the sum of your skill and experience and time devoted and your sacrifices over years upon years upon years of sacrificing friendships or even sacrificing family moments or this or that and becoming good at something where you're a master in that moment.
Ben said something in the last episode that I still take issue with, and I get mad thinking about. He said, I was so lucky that I got this job. And I said,
no, you're not, dude.
You're not lucky. I mean, you were lucky that it happened at this moment, maybe, and it didn't happen 6 months later.
Luck plays a part. Yeah. It's like 0.5%, though.
But it's actually mathematics, that it's going to happen at some time. Will you be ready? And some people get lucky that it happens earlier, and I guess that's luck. But you're right. You'd work hard, keep your nose down, keep grinding, and eventually there's an opportunity. And if you're ready and you've got the balls to go for it, it's not luck at that point. You know, it's work. Yeah,
all of us are to come from different backgrounds and different experiences. Yes, of course we have different opportunities given to us or opportunities handed to us or that come across our faces and this and that. But I'm a firm believer, I think, these days that for the most part in this awesome country with the affordabilities that we all have, we're all fairly in a scenario where I can say this with full conviction that your life is exactly what you've made it. For the most part, I mean, I'm not going to say that luck and chance.
We all start at
different places. Luck and chance, and I am a spiritual guy, so I will say miracles and blessings and all this. These all play a part, but it's a much smaller part than you play. You play such a big part, and when you finally just take the responsibility for your own life, you can stop the, it's only 2 hours of me doing nothing, or it's only a couple beers extra with the guys out tonight, which is going
to adds up.
Yeah, which is going to cost me minutes in the morning instead of me doing this. You literally, especially by the time you're in your 30s or your 40s, you are living the exact life that you have chosen, that you have built. Now, of course, some people are somewhat not cut out to be certain things, and they were raised to believe follow your dreams no matter what. So they're following their dreams of being a baseball player, but you're fucking 46 and you can't swing a bat.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not going to say that there's some delusional 45-year-old guy out there that's going to be a professional soccer player if he works hard enough. What I'm saying is, for the most part, if you're sitting there and you're bitching on Facebook about how life is so much better for your neighbor and you should be in a bigger house or driving a faster car, ultimately, you're just not taking responsibility, and the fact of the matter is you actually don't want that car as much as you think you do because you'd probably have it by now if you had legitimately just nose to the grindstone and made the decisions to make that happen if that's what's important to you.
Yep.
So, you know, I love seeing artists that are legitimately – the humility level is so crazy that they think that they're just lucky.
They're lucky. I know. It's silly.
And I am lucky. Yeah. And so are you. And so has Ben. Like, we're very fortunate.
We're lucky we were born in America.
That's what I'm saying. We're lucky we were born here.
Somewhere else would have been harder.
To parents that didn't murder us.
That's the luck.
There's so much that plays into it. And chance. And it's 1,000 variables that we're not even thinking of right now. But
a meteor didn't hit us.
The biggest variable is you. Like you're a creature of habit, you're a creature of pattern, and it's hard to change those things. But ultimately, it's your fucking responsibility.
That's right.
Nobody gets to live your life. You got to pay the price, and you get to reap the benefits of every single decision and all the minutiae of every single day. And you get to build it. If you aren't living the life that you want to, then dude, figure it out. Sit down. Write it out. Change your organizational
skills. Get your fucking shit together.
I don't mean that in a...
You say it. Get your fucking shit together,
I don't mean
people.
That in a mean way. I mean, slow your thought and realize that you're actually more responsible. My buddies actually just talked about this on their podcast, the Bad Christian podcast. They were just talking about how people don't take responsibilities for their life as much, and it's easier. And Matt, who's a good friend, was sort of going on his philosophical spiel, exactly kind of how I am, because we kind of click that way.
Yeah.
And if people just took more responsibility for themselves, they'd either be living a different life or at least just a bit more content with where they are.
Sure.
a little less complainy on the Facebooks and the Twitter trolling.
Well, that's a whole other can of worms. Let's close this out talking with, let's round it out with, so True Colors is an old song, a new old song, released on the album Broken.
Yeah.
And I love this story that I heard about Broken, the new album. And tell me, I'm pretty sure that I've got this right, was titled that because you broke the neck of the guitar while tracking the first song of the album and had to record the rest of the album with a broken, out-of-tune guitar. And so that was how the name Broken came about. Tell me more about that.
Totally false. I have no idea where you got that.
No, I'm pretty sure that was what happened.
Okay.
Okay. What was the story?
We originally were going to do like a dual record thing called Lost and Found. And I had a bunch of different songs, and I can't tell if you're serious, by the way, about the guitar.
Of course I was not.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I thought the whole thing was recorded out of tune.
Yeah, so we did.
I thought you were going to go with me on it, and you're like, this motherfucker.
No, I don't know. I don't
he's
know.
Not prepared. Do you know what? He came here. He said he was prepared. He's not prepared at all. No, he's got the wrong.
Dude, that's the tip of the iceberg with interview questions that come out of left field. You never know what's real. So we're going to do a Lost and Found.
You shut me the fuck down.
We're going to do a Lost and Found thing, and Lost was exploring like the new digital age and being an artist and a person that's sort of confused as to why people are so angry and it makes you angry and you're dealing with it. So Lost was somebody sort of figuring themselves out and running through the gauntlet with their head down, trying to figure out life a bit. There's some lucid dream experimentation that went on in that record and the lyrics. There was I'm Afraid of Americans, a David Bowie cover that was made to sound very Rage Against the Machine-y, sort of grindy.
Song, yeah.
You know, it's got some angst to it. Not teen angst or young angst. It was more like, I'm really thinking this through and I'm really bothered by a lot of things.
Yeah.
That's where Lost was supposed to take you. And Found was obviously supposed to take you on more of a journey of like finding oneself and all that. And I found myself in my early to mid 30s. And I had a couple songs that I had written in very good points in my mind and in my heart as far as who I was or where my faith was going or where this was going, that I had written on tour, which are interesting places for me because tour is such home. It's become such home, but it's so bittersweet for me because my family is my home.
Right.
And often I'm touring without my family. So I'm so split. There's like such a battle in me and in all of us. So I tried to represent that in some of the songs that I was writing for Found.
Yeah.
When it came time to track Found, I found myself in a really difficult breakup and a separation and other things in my life, other people's lives that were around me, my friends, close people that I loved were like, it just seemed like, you know, when it rains, it pours. There's a lot of tragedy happening around me, and people were getting sick, and there was cancer going through our friend group a lot. And it was a moment where I was like, I'm so far from feeling like I'm found or I can connect with people being found or trying to also feel found, that this isn't right. And we were already in the studio. We had already spent so much money and all this stuff. And my band's like, you have to do something. And I was letting my band down.
Yeah.
And I was getting calls from management and band like, what the fuck, dude? Like, why aren't you like finishing this and doing this? And I was like, because it's not right. And I don't want to do something. Just do something. This isn't good. This doesn't feel good.
Right.
So I just changed gears and I took a few songs that were supposed to be done and I had lyrics and everything for it. And I was like, I'm not fucking putting a song out. I'm not calling it this. The lyrics aren't going to be this. I can't do this.
Yeah.
So I either do nothing or I completely change all this and just throw a curveball and see if it sucks. And, that's what I did. So I changed lyrics on a lot and just completely rewrote, everything that was planned went just thrown out the window. And I wrote a record that could only be described as broken. And thank God my band followed me on that journey and changed some tones and approaches to how we recorded a couple of those songs. And thank God Matt was there. Matt actually came in to help mix some of the record and sort of pre-mix and pre-produce some of the stuff and salvage what was supposed to sound big and triumphant and this and that and made it gray. I wanted a gray and a blue record.
Yep.
And that was the cover. It's very gray and blue. That was the first video that we shot with Ben. That was very gray and blue. It needed to be that. And the lyrics followed me there. And I thought to myself the entire time, man, I'm so hurt right now, and I'm trying to describe hurt in such a specific but like a universal way where people don't necessarily have to take my experience, but they can still feel something in their experiences, which is how I try to approach mm-hmm. every song,
yeah,
and or most songs. And I thought, this is so specific and so me and so just a point in time, because I knew that I was recovering. I was already out of out of most of the pain and this and that. That I thought, this isn't going to connect with anybody. This right. record sucks. Like, it's great for me. It was important for me, and it represents exactly where our band was. And our band was fracturing in different ways and in different points, as most bands and relationships do.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to represent like the fractured nature of where we are in our life. And most people find themselves in their 30s not happy in a relationship, or not happy in a band, or not happy at a job. And I thought, well, I'm just, fuck it, caution to the wind, I'm just going to do this specifically. This is for me. I don't care if anybody listens.
Yeah.
And that was
Seems
the record
like
we put
it's
out.
Connected. A lot
and
of
it
people
is
have,
really,
yeah,
dude, it
has
been
really
very
cool to see.
It connected in a way that I will certainly get emotional about right now, because it wasn't the plan. It wasn't what I thought. I really put myself out there. I made myself as vulnerable as I think artists should, even against my better judgment. It felt wrong to be that vulnerable because it's scary.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking about like some quote from this U2 book about like how vulnerability is the only thing that actually matters. Mm. And that's what music is supposed to be. It's supposed to just be vulnerability and that to its extreme. And I had talked to a few sort of like modern philosopher guys, this older gentleman that I was speaking to at the time, and a few books, and that was sort of like vulnerability was kind of like a hot key,
sure,
button a few years after this record was written. So it was kind of like a good time of that sort of philosophy being explored in the world.
Yeah.
And that allowed me to like just sort of overcome those fears and say, fuck this, man. Like, I will be vulnerable, and you can take it for what it's worth, and I really don't care. And I'm really glad that I did. I'm glad my band allowed me to do that. I'm glad my band followed along in that vision and didn't say, like, well, what the fuck do we do with these other songs?
Right.
Which there are still songs for Found.
Hey, there we go.
And now I'm ready to finish that, or close to ready to finish Found. So we have, because there's a lot of cool, very, very cool music still to go.
Yep.
Some of which our fans have heard and have asked for, and some of which nobody's ever heard of yet. But that's how the record came to be. And we got it for the most part where we wanted it. There's a few songs I'm not really stoked on as far as how we produced them,
yeah,
or how they came out.
At some point, you got to fucking just go.
You
with
just
it,
let
though,
it go.
You know? I mean,
because
nothing's
tether,
ever going to be perfect,
yeah,
and
no,
so
no.
At some point, yeah,
you cut the tether and let it roll. And the crazy thing is, like, I've had a number of people say, like, "This is your coolest song," and I'm like, "I fucking hate that song."
That's a Steve Jobs thing. He said, he's like, "Don't ever make something perfect, because there's always the option to release the 2.0, the second color, and you fix that shit then. You got to get out." I forget. I'm butchering the what he said, but that idea of like, if you can get it to 90% and get it out there, you've always got a chance to make, you know, to write this or do this. But like, if you wait till 100%, you're gonna miss that thing that made it special.
Yeah,
you know?
It's hard to do that when it comes to recording. But yeah, I've always been a guy that's like faulting people for making things too precious.
Yeah,
and I fault myself for doing that too. But I think I'm pretty good and pretty self-aware at not allowing things to be very precious.
You said that when I was working on the album artwork for the thing, like just the layout, you were like, I was like, what do you want to do? It was like very quick turnaround. You're like, I'm not precious about it. And I never heard that phrase before, and I say that shit all the time.
Yeah,
now.
It makes sense.
It's like, because you're like, it's not that I don't give a fuck. It's that
I give all the fucks, and I give so many fucks.
But I don't, I'm not going to make it like, I don't have to micromanage this whole thing. Like, I trust you. Like, let's get there. If, you know, if there's a big problem, I'll let you know. But I'm not going to be like, and can you just nudge it over to the, like, you're like, I'm not precious about it.
Yeah,
so good.
I've worked with, dealt with, and lived with people in that space a bit too much to ever want to ever be accused of being like that person or those types of people, and I am a perfectionist, especially with my music. especially with how it looks and how the whole entire layout is one big concise thing. It needs to all make sense. Every lyric, I will tell you, with my lyrics, every syllable, every word, every placement means everything to me.
Yeah.
When I get it to where I'm happy, then I do have to cut the preciousness. Mm. Because I do realize, just like the Steve Jobs spirit of what you're saying,
yeah, sure.
The past is such a subjective thing to everyone. Mm. No matter what you do, whatever you've done, the 11 people will have 11 different opinions about what you just did. No matter how factual or recorded
it is. Yeah,
right. Or how recorded it is, yeah. how concrete it is, carved in stone. Mm-hmm. History, every moment of the past is so subjective, it's worthless to think about changing somebody's mind of what their first impression was or what their current impression right. was of whatever you did. So who cares? You got to just fucking untether it
yes.
and not let it rule you, because the past means so it means nothing except for education. And
right.
you have to even take that education and realize that it's a subjective lens that you're looking through.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance that I'm going to convince some people that the album was written with a broken guitar. And I, you know what I mean? Like, it's good.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think it's
that,
good to
That
keep...
will be the thing that sticks in people's heads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They'll be like, I don't remember much of that podcast, but it was great that.
yeah, yeah.
And he kind of slipped that little thing and then Moon recovered and pretend like it didn't happen, but that's definitely what happened. And I, yeah. So, yeah, you're right. It's subjective.
No matter
what. Like, am I joking right now? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if it's recorded. Everybody's take will go through their lens.
And that is kind of cool about music, that it is like you're writing. Oh, shit. I just heard this on another podcast. They were talking about some super sad song. Oh, fuck. I can't remember what
almost
it is.
Almost all my songs are super sad, by the way. Even the ones that sound happy.
The happy are, yeah. You're sad.
I like sad songs.
Yeah.
I really connect with sad songs.
But this song was just talking about how it's like a one-hit wonder song that you would know but I can't tell you what it is because I don't remember. But basically, super love song, and it's later revealed. The guy's like, this is about my fucking dog. My dog died. And everybody thinks it's about this chick. I wish I could remember. But anyway, yeah. So everybody puts this meaning on it. They think about that relationship, that loved one, that chick that dumped them, and they're like, oh, this song speaks to me. And you're like, it's about a fucking dog, brother.
Right.
So
yeah
everybody puts their own meaning. And that's great. That's okay. You know?
Yeah. And that, I think, I don't know if I'm attributing this to Freddie Mercury correctly, but wherever I read this quote, I've tried to sort of live by it as a professional. Somebody asked him, like, I think it was him or Bowie, somebody like that, like, hey, man, why don't you explain these lyrics? You know, you seem pretty cryptic, but obviously seems like it's about this. And he's like, why would I explain my lyrics? Like, it means so many things to different people that I will take that away from all the people that think it's something different.
Sure.
And I have people come up to me all the time and go, oh, my gosh, this song meant the world to me. It's so connected with this lyric. I know that you meant that. And almost all the time, they're wrong.
Yeah.
But I am so thrilled that they connected something that moved them. Like, being able to move somebody with music is my dream, my literal dream come true.
Yep.
That's what changed my life when I was 10, and that's how music moves me, and that is such a, like, legitimately magic thing. It's one of the few things that I know I can always hold on to in a belief in a higher power, is that music can move me in that way.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So being able to be a part of that is so cool. Why would I want to explain my silly personal lyric of when I was here at this one moment and experienced this, if that lyric, the way that I've crafted it and designed it, moved you for
a
completely
different
reason? No way I'm going to take that away from you. You're going to ruin your own song for 90% of your audience if you explain every little bit of it.
Yeah.
And there's only a few times where somebody's come up and said, dude, is this song about this, blah, 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 and has nailed it. And when they nailed it, I turn and go, oh, my God. And I'm like, dude, you and I, man, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
You know Bond, like John Wayne?
This is what I was thinking
about.
Yeah.
John Wayne and I connected on one particular song because he came up and said, dude, I know every word of what you're saying in this song. Let me tell you my experience and how it associates to every line. And he did not. And it brought me to tears because I was like, that's exactly what I experienced.
I imagine that you're having those connections are usually going to happen with people that you know, that know you well, because it, you know, like, he knows you so well that I think it probably made sense more.
He can see the craft
more.
A bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
where somebody who's never met you, they don't know, they can't, you know, they just see you on stage, they can't, you know what I mean? Like, Bon, I know, knows you really well, so I could see how he could sneak in there and
he
figure
nailed that
out.
One.
That's
my
funny.
Mother called me yesterday, FaceTime me, my mom, my 76-year-old mama. and asked
me. Shout out to Mama Moon.
Yeah, Mama Moon asked me what a song meant. And she's like, what does this song mean? And she said, I'm assuming it's this and blah, blah, blah. And
did you lie?
No, I somewhat told her. I was like, no, actually, it's about this. And I didn't tell her line for line. I just said, this is where I was coming from. And when she associated that, she's like, oh, that is so cool because this line didn't make any sense to me. And now it makes all the sense.
That's fun.
So that was a little different scenario.
Sure,
but in the
sure.
press, I'm not going to be like, this song is actually sad. And
right.
this is why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll allude to things if I think it's important, but
sure.
like that Freddie Mercury quote or whoever it was, I thought that was really smart.
Yeah.
And like pretty educational for writers these days to sort of keep in their pocket.
Mm, I love it. I love it. I love you. I love your
love
beard.
Love you too, man.
I
love your videos.
I love you. I love you making them with me, making them with you.
It's fun. Sorry, it's a little stressful sometimes.
Dude, no, it's I honestly love we're not going to talk about this because we have to go, but The Ride is another example.
Oh, The Ride was incredible.
Fucking love that video. And that was no thought put into that. I mean, you had a little
that
bit of thought.
That was all thought
on your end.
No thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right,
and then,
yeah, yeah.
But my point is that, yeah, again, I fucking love that video. And that was.
It's so dope.
Yeah.
That's one of the coolest videos I'll ever be a part of.
No, we're gonna do cooler shit. We're gonna keep pushing the bar for.
Yeah, that one was incredible, and the story makes it even better for us.
I know. God. Okay. All right.
The other cool thing too is with you and me is like we're both. I mean, obviously we're both St. Louis kids, but there's so many little cultural nuances in this town.
Oh yeah.
That South County to North County to city, like we all not speak differently, but I guess it is speak differently in our attitudes. Or of the understanding of what our attitudes actually mean.
Mm.
So you and I get on so well because you sound so dry and angry with a lot of the things that you say. But I get it. I know how to brush you off. I know how to blow you off. And a lot of people are like, that guy fucking hates me.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
you do for a minute, but I'm okay with that.
No, of course. Yeah.
And that's why we work because I come off like that to people too. People are like, dude, he's so direct and intense.
Yeah.
And he's such an asshole. But I'm not an asshole. I just need things to get done right now at this moment in this one scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't read that wrong.
You reminded me of a thing that I wanted to start doing that I forgot to do that we're going to do now because I think it's funny because this is kind of at this point in its infancy a St. Louis podcast, so I want to ask each guest, where'd you go to high school?
Oh, man, Lindbergh,
right?
Flyers,
me
baby.
Too. That's why we connect. Lindbergh.
I guess
you know?
So. I didn't connect with anybody at Lindbergh when I was
I
there.
I know, but come on.
But you know what I'm saying.
But I do think, okay, we got to go. But that's,
I'm
now
sure
you
we
know.
Probably came from like similar socioeconomic backgrounds, so our parents sort of approached life in a certain way.
It's not like you're going to be predestined to be a certain type of person, but there are little things where you're like, why is this guy so much different than me? And you're like, oh, because he went to X, Y, or Z school, which is so interesting that St. Louis has figured out that like sort of pre-qualifier to be like, where'd you go to high school?
Right,
I think it
does
says
matter
something.
Here.
It
you,
says something.
You and I, and I'm not tooting our own horns too much here, you and I are some of the most fun and like
we're the best people we
actual
know.
No, I just mean like we're fun people. And if you actually get to know us, you know that. Like Goldfinger guys have said this too. Like, dude, you are such a party guy and so much fun, but you come off so dry, dark, and what's another?
Ugly.
No, it's like beautiful. dry, dark, and direct.
Direct. Okay,
that it's really difficult to take that in sometimes in this like courtesy culture. And
you have it much more. You have to kind of be a nice, like you're a personality. Like you kind of have to like, you probably feel that pull of like, I can't be an asshole. Cause like, you know,
I feel that pressure sometimes,
yeah.
But you just can't, care about that. You
right,
just can't
right.
care. But you and I are both very dry, very dark, and very direct, but we're really happy people.
Yeah. And I think that it's, I think that when you meet people, this is in defense of me, you know, being that way. I think when you meet somebody that is a little bit more reserved in that way, you know, is a little bit dry and dark, when you unlock that like fun and happiness, I think it's more rewarding than somebody who's just like, hey, Moon, it's so great to meet you. Oh my gosh. You know what I mean? Like you're like,
right.
You know, like, all right, I know they're into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
there's
like,
less depth, less value.
I love meeting people that treat me like shit in the beginning.
I don't treat you
and
like
then
shit.
No, no but I love meeting somebody where you don't know where you stand, and as you get to know them, you realize We're friends. We're connected well. We see a lot. That has so much more reward to me than like when I meet somebody and we're like, oh, we hit it off great, because you realize they hit it off great with everybody because they're the kind of person who's just like happy to meet everybody.
Yeah. Or they want everybody to like them and speak good about them. I don't care. Badmouth me all you want. Nobody knows me.
Because you know, because that's the thing. People are complex, and when you really get to know somebody, then you really know them, and you can't say you know somebody by talking to them for 10 minutes. And I think that other type of personality, which, hey, everybody's different, that's your own thing, but I think it's weird to just be like, well, I know them, they're a great person, I talked to them for 10 minutes, you know? So that's why I like podcasting long form, is because you can really start to get to know somebody, you know? You kind of really hear them more. And,
I think you're right, man. I think your podcast will do really well because people like that, man. They like depth. You know, we like to classify the general public as a dumb mob, but people see through bullshit and far deeper than people give the general consumer credit for.
I think you're right, and I think personally, selfishly for me, it's just, I mean, dude, I had to make a fucking podcast to get the time to talk to you for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, you got them, and it's a little bit awkward to get to hang out with people that you're friends with just to hang out. It's almost like we all got so much. I know I'm guilty of this. It's making me set time aside to say, hey, Ben, come in my basement and talk with me for an hour.
When's the last time you invited me to your house?
Well,
never.
I just moved.
I don't know that. You didn't tell me.
Well, okay. But here's the important thing is at some point, this podcast is running out of the garage that we're doing a whole, and then it's going to be, then I'm going to turn the cameras on and you're going to see the beauty of what I'm trying to do here. But right now we live in squalor, and I appreciate you wading through it with me. I hit accuracy 50% of the stuff I said today was true. So that's,
did you cover everything you intended to?
Nope. Yeah, I know I did. I got every quote unquote rumor out there that I intended to disseminate.
You know, long form, by the way, just sort of drag it even more. But the other thing with when you say you don't know somebody after 10 minutes, you also always have to remember that the majority of, I'll say this, a negative story lives so much longer. Mm. It's so much better. Yeah. And the general person that runs into their rock star, you know, that they're a fan of, or their movie star or something like that, they have a 30-second interaction. Don't you think, chances are, by the time they get around to telling that story, it might be a bit more seductive inside of them to tell some shitty story about how Tom Hanks is an asshole. Mm. Yeah. Or like, he was such a dick, you know, he was at dinner and he did this or blah, blah, blah. Even if it's completely fabricated.
Right.
Even if Tom Hanks just said, can we wait until after I eat? You know, somebody asks him for a picture and he says, can we wait until after I eat? And then he gives him a picture and a signed baseball and a picture of Forrest Gump. So who knows what he does for him? That negative 7 seconds of interpretation is going to live so much longer in that story that this guy has with his favorite actor at a restaurant from 12 years before. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So you always got to remember.
Yeah, and people, when you're inconveniencing somebody who's just doing their thing, you're catching, like, you're inconveniencing them, and they know that's part of the thing, and so that's a piece of it. There's also the piece that, like, people aren't happy 24 hours a day, so you might catch them in that little moment where they're frustrated about something. There's so many different things that go into it, and also, people have shitty periods of their life, too. So it's not fair to say, just because Tom Hanks, is an asshole in 2019 doesn't mean that he wasn't a great guy when he was filming Mr. Rogers in 2018. You know what I mean? Like, we all have dark times, and you might catch some. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
And that's even like potential reality. Let's say you're just in the same zip code as Tom Cruise or
another Tom. Or just Hardy.
We'll just say Tom Morello.
Tom Morello.
All right, so you're at the same concert as Tom Morello, and your friend from a couple towns over wasn't able to make the concert. You didn't even see Tom Morello. You didn't even see his band,
right?
Whatever band he was there with. But for some reason, in some moment when you see him at the next barbecue, you got a few beers in you, and you talk about how you met Tom Morello. Now, what imaginary story are you going to say? It's just so much more intoxicating.
Much juicy. Yeah.
90% of the time, this guy is going to say something negative.
Yeah.
He's going to fabricate a completely just complete lie.
Sure.
And more or less because it's juicier and because it will live longer and because it's more of a good 40-second story to tell at a barbecue, it's
like
usually
I'm
a negative story.
That. Yeah, I love all of to us tell are, good dude. Stories.
All of us
yeah.
are. And good stories are always better in those scenarios for some reason if they're negative. So just remember, the next time somebody tells you about some interaction he had, if it's not positive, it could be total bullshit.
I like
but
that.
Few people are going to make up a positive story.
Oh.
It takes a
so
really
impressive
moment. So if
you want to be a really
moment.
Good liar, start making up positive shit.
You know what I'm saying, though? It takes a really impressive moment for somebody to then share, like, hey, you know, I met this guy who you just said was an asshole.
And he couldn't be nicer.
Right. It, like, but, you know, like, usually we only hear press about some actor blowing up on a screen or something that's bad.
Yeah.
Very few... You know,
I met Christian Bale, and he held the door for me, and he asked if he could get me a cab.
But isn't
not
it
as
way
good
cooler
as he,
if, like, oh yeah, Christian Bale's a total dick to me, man. Yeah. Like, you know, like those
He's
stories.
He's fucking Batman. He's earned it. You
those
know?
Stories just have more impact.
Yeah,
so just,
I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea how we got on this subject, but you know what I'm saying? Like that's what you got to deal with when you're doing.
If
anything.
You meet Moon on the street and he treats you like shit, just remember.
There's no way. First of all, there's no way. I'm the nicest guy.
There's no way. You're lying. If you heard that, you're lying.
I'm dark, dry, and direct, but man, am I nice.
He is. The nicest guy that I know, and I mean that 100%. He's on the Instagram at Here Lies Moon. Oh, yeah. Here Lies Moon.
Here Lies Moon. Because it's social media. You see the pun?
Oh, that's
it's social
good.
Media.
That's punny.
Yeah, it's epitaphy.
Okay, and if you're somewhere, this is at JordanPhoenixShow.com. That's where you can find this or other ways to find it. Link for True Colors is in the description, and we'll put the Matt Amelung stuff up there. Anything else you want to talk about? Any shows coming up? Or?
Check out The Riz Show if you don't already listen to our show or the podcast.
Yes.
Goldfinger Music online everywhere. I'm sure we'll be touring at some point somewhere close to you. And then, look out for more Greek Fire music. And I think I'm gonna start working in the new year on like some solo stuff. There's some solo stuff I have. I don't know if it's gonna have a band name. I don't really want to do it with my name.
Mm.
So it'll probably be some other band. But it's an iteration of musicians and music that I would like to do that I don't really have an outlet for.
Wow!
Right now,
can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting.
Can't
I want
to
do
shoot a music video. For
I want to do a couple different fests. I want to take advantage of what we talked about earlier, where you can just sort of do things now, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it was fun.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How about a collaboration with somebody? You thinking about hopping on the next
Jay
thing?
I want to do a lot of that kind of stuff. Yeah, people will have me. I can sing. I can play some instruments, and
mandolin,
I can write.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to do, I'm down for doing. Talking about mandolin, I wish I could play some mandolin.
You could play mandolin.
If I could play some mean mandolin,
okay,
that'd be
mandolin.
Dope.
Yeah, okay.
But I can't right now.
A man of many talents. Thank you, Mr. Moon, for joining me here on our second episode of the Jordan Phoenix Show. Let's take the outro out, and stay healthy, y'all.
Thanks, dude.